Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Blue Jays From Away podcast, episode 46.
Got this force coming through in my blood, in my veins. It's a current of love.
In this episode, we talk prospects with Doug Fox, author of Clutchlings. So sit back, ladies and gentlemen, take a listen, and get your Blue Jays on. It's the Blue Jays From Away podcast. This podcast is brought to you by the 2016 Toronto Blue Jays Minor League Handbook. It's coming this March, so stay tuned for exciting content covering the 2016 Toronto Blue Jays Minor League system hand-in-hand with the Blue Jays From Away premium content section. You can still get the 2015 edition at reduced rates of just $2.99 at the Blue Jays From Away shop. Stay tuned. We've got our interview with Doug Fox coming right up. Welcome to the podcast, Doug.
Hey, Jay. Thanks very much for having me.
Before we get started talking about prospects and awesome things like that, let's talk first. I mean, it's been the last couple weeks have been sort of crazy for Blue Jays fans. I mean, we had the whole playoffs experience. The Jays lost to the Royals, and then we find out just a few days later that Alex Anthopoulos, the architect of this team, is not coming back. So, what are the thoughts that you have on this situation?
Well, my thoughts are that having been around for 92 and 93, I do not recall the off seasons from either one of those seasons being quite like this one, and I think there's still much more to come. As far as Alex goes, I definitely was shocked, like so many people were, when the announcement came. I had just actually posted an article that morning for another site that I write for about his to-do list for the off season, and as I just finished clicking the button on Twitter to tweet it, I started to get a barrage of people saying, "Did you know that he's rejected their contract offer?" So it definitely came as a surprise to me. Thinking back, as I say, I think some of the warning signs were there. I think the fact that he extended all of his top assistants in the summer, like I know that there are some who said that that's a standard business practice, but that's I found that interesting, that he was maybe kind of giving them a bit of a trampoline, a bit of a trapeze to fall back on. I also think the more and more that the fact that he went all in at the trade deadline, I mean, that's kind of been his style. But to ransack the farm system as much as he did, even though he says it's still in very good shape, and to some extent I agree with him. I think that was perhaps a sign that maybe he took Shapiro's hiring as a sign that the Blue Jays ultimately might be going in a different direction. Or maybe he just felt that he was ready for a more expanded role, and he knew that he was not going to get that under Shapiro. So perhaps with Paul Beeson's blessing, maybe not, but perhaps he said, "Hey, let's bet the farm on this," and it almost worked. But I think it very much was, it's in keeping with Alex's style. It was a bold move. I think the easy move would have been to take their final offer, if we can believe what we've heard in the media. But I think for Alex that wasn't enough, and he feels that there is a bigger role out there for him, and I have no doubt that there is. But it's very shocking, and I certainly would not have predicted this one, say, 6 months ago.
Well, you said that they bet the farm on it, and that's literally what they did. I mean, they traded away about 14, if not more, of their prospects in the last year, and they really emptied it out. So, and you said that, you think the farm's not in that bad shape, that a lot of people are saying it's not as, the sky is not falling. What are your thoughts on the overall the overall shape of things in the minor league system?
A couple of thoughts come to mind. It's definitely a quality over quantity thing. I think we'll see Dalton Pompey, who I still consider to be a prospect. I think we'll see him as a major leaguer to stick at some point next year. I think we'll see Anthony Alford and perhaps Rowdy Tellez as top 100 prospects if by midseason next year at least. And so with other prospects behind them like Reed Foley and Urena and even John Harris, who I think will bounce back, and Connor Green, of course, who just came a huge distance this year. There's certainly some upside there. But, of course, what they've done with trading not only those 14, Jay, but go back to the four they traded for Donaldson. That's 18 prospects. Many of them were top 20 guys, I think at least half of them. I know I had counted at one point. And that's a serious blow to your farm system. Now, the Blue Jays are confident that they can rebuild it. They've done it before, possibly not to this extent. What does concern me, though, is that we know that last summer, or the summer of 2014, they let a number of scouts go. And we also know just very recently, I believe this last week, Ishmael Cruz, I believe it is, who is their Latin director and their chief scout in that area, he has gone to the Dodgers. And that concerns me as well, because that was there was a guy who landed or helped to land Barreto, Urena, Doyle Lugo, Miguel Castro, and even Vlad Jr. this summer. So, yes, it's been decimated to some extent. There is some talent there. I'm a little concerned about their ability to rebuild it. I think Anthopoulos overstated things, perhaps understandably so, and kind of padding his resume on the way out the door. But there are some concerns going forward. This team, I was involved with some interactions on Twitter last night with some followers, because when I read about the Blue Jays being interested in Aroldis Chapman, I thought, well, that's great, but what are you going to give up for him? Because this club has definitely got nothing in terms of prospects that they are willing to give up for him. So would you really weaken your major league roster, or at least give up somebody on it for a player with a limited defined role like Chapman? So going forward, I have some concerns about the state of the system. It's no longer a system that's in the top 5 or 10 or possibly 20.
Now, let's talk a little bit about some of the more specifics in the system, and that's sort of one of the things that happens when you trade away so many players over the course of, I guess, a calendar year, is that the names that you see on this current top 20 list or top 15 list or whoever, you know, however many you're going to write about, the names are going to be very different, and you're going to see some people that I think a lot of Blue Jays fans are going to look at and say, you know, who is this? Like, for example, I mean, in the top 20, just squeaking in is Jose Espada, and you've got, you know, just glancing through quickly, you've got, you know, Clinton Holland, I think, is somebody that a lot of people may not be aware of, or Justin Maiesi. You know, there's a lot of people that, and Angel Perdomo as well. I mean, there's a lot of people here that people may look at, you know, how is Angel Perdomo number 8, and how is Richard Urania number 6? You know, obviously the depth has been, you know, taken out of the situation here, because we've got so many people traded away, and there's going to be a lot of people wondering who some of these guys are. So is there anyone on that list that you think has snuck in because of the, you know, the trades and the other players who are gone, that you think is really legit and you think that people are going to start to hear about soon?
I want to say about half of them, but I won't. Perdomo definitely was a leap in the top 10. I was actually expecting to take some flack for that one, and I didn't. And in honor of Anthopoulos, who liked to roll the dice, I went out on a limb with Perdomo, because he was lights out in the Northwest League. And I just think a 6'6 lefty with a deceptive delivery, like, there is a potential there, maybe as a bullpen arm. But there's a guy who I think is legit. I think you find the more guys who snuck in probably in what I call the next 10, guys who've been overlooked a little bit. But if there's somebody in that list who I just have always been high on, and he just has not been able to show us enough because of injury is catcher Danny Jansen. I am a huge fan of his. I think he profiles like a Russell Martin defense first, at least, type of catcher. But he's a guy who I think is very legit. And the fact that they have Russell Martin gives him some time to develop a little bit more. And I know Pentecost, even Max Pentecost, even though he's been hurt, certainly gets more of the high profile and the acclaim as a high draft pick. But I could see him as being surplus and possibly trade bait once he proves he's healthy, because I think Danny Jansen is really legit. But overall, like, let's face it, these are names that a year ago I don't do. I do a top 20, and then I do five who I just couldn't quite justify putting in there. But I don't go beyond that. And I know some sites do top 30, top 40, top 50. I don't go that far. But if I did, I think a number of the names that I had in there probably would be more like 20 to 30 or possibly even low 30s guys. So, yeah, there are a number of names that did jump up there. But just the same, somebody like Jansen, somebody like Perdomo even, definitely I think is legitimately jumped up there. And from the little tiny bit we saw from Vlad Jr. in Instructs, He's legit. He's only 10 on my list because I haven't seen him personally and haven't had enough reports on him. But man, the ones that I have say he's an impact back, a looming impact bat. That's hard to say.
Okay, so now that we've talked a little bit about some of the specifics, why don't we get into how you put the list together? Do you have a system? And I'm hoping to be able to talk to Kyle Matt at Capital J's, because he has a very different type of system. It's a very sort of mathematical system,
yes,
where he assigns weights to players' position and, you know, age at the level he's at and production and tools. You know, what's your methodology for your list?
Kyle's is very interesting. I have looked at it, and it's very similar to the system that Kylie Daniels of FanGraphs use, a future value type of projection, and it makes sense. And it's definitely a lot of work, but yeah, as you say, it assigns values and weights to certain aspects, and then comes up with an overall grade for a prospect. Mine's not that scientific. It's definitely more, I guess, just based on feel, based on what I have seen of those players and what I have read of those players, considering where they're at in their career. That's a huge factor for me, where they've been and where they're going. And that's why, for example, Aradi Tellez, I've seen in a couple of other sites, and even MLB Pipeline, I think, seventh. Is his ranking, and I have him third because I'm just so impressed with what he's done to reform his body, to try to become more than just a one-dimensional player. And I think where you consider where he was at a year and a half ago to where he is now, I certainly can justify putting him there in that spot. So it's very much a process of sorting out players where they're at in their stages of development, how much projection is remaining for them, and what's the likelihood of them being a major leaguer. So it's more a qualitative thing than a quantitative thing for me.
Okay, so let's sort of look at the guys who missed. You've got five guys on that list. Tell us a little bit about them.
I think this year, I have to say, I think every single one of them are interesting stories, and you know, and without spoiling it, just to go through a couple, it's hard to say who my favorite is. Shane Dawson, obviously, because he's a Canadian, because he grew up in Drayton Valley, Alberta, and I did some research, and he is. There are a couple of players who were born in Alaska, but they didn't grow up there. He, as far as I can tell, is the most northerly player in terms of his development, where he played his minor baseball, of anybody in North America. I was driving with my wife from Red Deer to Vancouver a couple of summers ago, caught a couple of Seas games while we were there. And Drayton Valley is about an hour and a half or so northwest of Red Deer, and we had to go in that direction because we wanted to drive through the mountains and up through Golden and down through the interior of BC. And I just could not believe when I saw, I knew Dawson was from Drayton Valley, and I just couldn't believe that somebody that far north could land a pro contract. So he's definitely, I mean, he's fringy, as are all of the guys on this list, but I definitely like him. I like Lane Thomas, a very athletic infielder who kind of took a step back in his development this year, but may have had some injury issues. I really like Lupe Chavez, a Mexican pitcher kind of in the Roberto Osuna mold, maybe not the same body type. I like his story as well. Justin Schaefer could be a Connor Green for next year as far as we know. And Ryan McBroom, who just, you know, is one of those mid-round college senior picks, didn't sign for a whole lot of money, and all he has done in the 2 years he's been in the organization is hit. So to me, this was a fun post to write, and I really enjoyed researching these guys. I asked around a couple of people and to get some information about them, and they're all, you know, none of them may turn out to be major league prospects, but I think in their own right, they're all very interesting, which is, I guess, why I like writing so much about prospects. It's just the challenge to see what they could become, but it's a really interesting group this year.
Well, that's, you know, an interesting take on the top five, I guess, guys who are just left off the list. I think Chavez is an interesting guy, but he's, again, so such a young player, and especially these guys who come out of the international signings are so tough to call. They're so hit and miss, and you know, they come in so young. I think Lane Thomas, there's way more than he's shown us. You know, I actually spoke to some people around Lane last year, and I talked to Lane, and I think the injury was even, I think, more nagging than a lot of people realized last year and he tried to play through it and just really couldn't do anything. And I think the other thing that really kept him from having a really good year was the fact that he was playing a new position and not playing it very well, and I think the adjustment there may have also sort of seeped into his batting. And you know, I think for a guy, again, he's also young, this is only his second year, and he had a chance to play in Lansing, showing that the Blue Jays were being much more aggressive with their young players. Schaefer, I think I would probably have in my top 20, although I don't do a ranking anymore. Schaefer, I saw him a couple of times last year, and there's definitely like a really great sinker baller in there. And whether he's going to be a guy who comes out of the bullpen, and maybe like a Ryan Tepera, who may be able to sort of sneak in under the radar in a couple of years, or if he could end up being a Kendall Graveman. Also, you know, he may need another year, but I think, you know, when he keeps the ball down in the strike zone, it's very difficult to hit him hard. He doesn't strike out a lot of guys, and he may need a strikeout pitch to really become that elite guy. But he's definitely a guy who can keep the ball on the ground. You know, and Shane Dawson does so many things well. He's a really competitive guy, and you know, him and Robson, who's on the list, and we can talk about him in a little bit. You know, I've talked to both of these guys, and they both want to win. They both want to get out there and do whatever they can. And two good Canadian boys who are really trying to make their impact. And Dawson just has that feel for pitching and that feel for his curveball, and can really get a lot of strikeouts that way. And we'll see. I'm really looking forward to see what Dawson does at higher levels. And the same thing with Ryan McBroom. I think McBroom is just such a natural hitter, and I really love his swing. I love watching him take BP, because he's not the type of guy who tries to go out of the park with every swing. He's really trying to do something, and he's trying to contribute to his team. I think he led the league in sack flies last year, is what, you know, was part of his MVP season. And you know, I think, again, I think you hit the nail right on the head in your post, saying, you know, if he was 2 years younger, he would be a top prospect. But because he's 23, probably turning 24, he's a little bit overlooked in that range. And I've even talked to scouts here and there who, A, they love McBroom, but want to see him against better velocity and seeing if he can do what he does to, you know, an 88-mile-an-hour or 86-mile-an-hour fastball, if he can do the same thing to a 93-mile-an-hour fastball consistently. So that's sort of my take on your five who just missed. But let's look at sort of the next part of that list, where we're going to get the bottom 10. So again, here's where we have a couple of interesting names like Jose Espada and Roman Fields and Justin Maiesi. So what are you hearing about those guys?
Well, first of all, Fields, I noticed tonight he's playing in the Arizona Fall League. A little bit overmatched, but the problem for Roman, who might be the fastest player in the organization, or if he's not, he's a nose behind Anthony Alford. His problem, of course, is that you can't steal first base. I see he's walked more often than he's struck out against advanced pitching in the Arizona Fall League. I think that's a really, really promising sign. He's still ahead of him at 17. He's still a fringy major leaguer, but if he can find a way to get on base consistently and take advantage of that speed, that changes the picture dramatically. Maiesi, there's just so much to be impressed about him. I follow, as I'm sure you do, Chris King on Twitter, who writes for a number of publications and covers prospects in the heat of the Florida Sun, and he was just gushing about him a number of times. And he's just one of those guys. The Blue Jays like to comb the bushes for players who are kind of off the beaten path and are not necessarily playing in huge baseball hotbeds. And West Texas certainly is a little bit out of the way for scouts, but the Blue Jays didn't give up on him. They've been following him so apparently since early in the spring, and he had a very impressive year. He's still a long, long way away, and let's see what he does at the next level. But he's certainly somebody worth looking at. Clinton Holland, I really feel like he's somebody we have to talk about. For listeners who don't know about him, he's had some issues. There are some questions about his attitude prior to the draft. Lots of questions about his delivery, and they were borne out by him undergoing Tommy John surgery over a year ago. He came back this year better than ever with Vancouver. Was promoted to Lansing, had a fantastic debut. Some inconsistency in between there, but he then was caught in a positive drug test for a performance-enhancing drug near the end of August, which cost him the rest of the season and will cost him a good chunk of the beginning of next season. And he's just an interesting story that I've gotten to know his family a little bit. I've spoken with him in the past. He's reluctant, understandably, to talk now, and I think just wants to focus on getting ready for what's coming up this season, and it's going to be a while before he makes his debut. But there's an electric arm in there, and the Blue Jays are so good at finding them. And there's a guy, once again, even though his season debut was going to be delayed, there's somebody who's got, as you mentioned earlier about Dawson, that advanced feel for pitching. There's a guy who could rise really quickly, and Blue Jay fans by this midseason next year might be saying, so who's this Holland guy? There's just somebody that I'm really high on.
Well, I agree. I mean, I was surprised at any, because I was actually in Lansing when the news of the suspension came down, and I had a chance to speak to both the pitching coach and the manager the next day, and they both think that, you know, he's a good kid, he works hard, and he's going to get past this. But I had actually, you know, scheduled my trip so that I could see Holland pitch, and of course, he was suspended the day before, so my timing remains impeccable. But a guy I did see throw last year was Tom Robson, and I've got to say that I think, you know, if I was doing the ranking, I would say he's like 16, but with a bullet, as you have him 16th on your list. But, you know, he was throwing harder than I'd ever seen him. I saw him in 2013 throwing probably about 90, 91, 92, and I was just impressed with his ability to get ground balls and hit and throw strikes and throw his curveball for strikes. And I think he's still trying to find the feel on his off-speed pitch, but he, again, like as I've said with Dawson, a fierce competitor. He wants to win, and he likes the spotlight. He likes the big games, and I saw him throw a great outing in the playoffs, I believe. He's a guy that I think is going to be moving up very quickly in the next year.
And he's a guy too. Jay, he's Rule 5 eligible this year, and perhaps in a way the Tommy John surgery he underwent is a blessing because it bought him an extra year, at least in the organization, because I think somebody might be actually snapping that arm up if he had progressed higher. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what he can do, again, against the advanced competition next year. It's one thing to get the low A hitters out, but it's another, let's say, in the Florida State League. So I think we will get a true read. Unfortunately, because Florida State State League games aren't televised, we won't get to see them, but we certainly will get a true read from the reports we get out of Florida on what his projection, what his future is.
Yeah, and I also think that he's a guy because he has I think he does have that sort of pitchability, as people like to call it, his pitch selection. I think we're going to see him in New Hampshire by about June or early July.
I think that's definitely a safe bet.
Now let's look at the top half of your list here a little bit. What put Dalton Pompey at number one on your list?
Well, despite Dalton's struggles with the Blue Jays, I still think he remains a blue chip prospect. And I will go out on a limb here, and I will say that it will not shock me in the least if Dalton Pompey, say by July or August, is a starting center fielder over Kevin Pillar. And I know that there might be some outrage headed my way on Facebook for that. I just think Pompey is the complete package. He gets on base. His baseball IQ is off the chart. His athleticism is incredible. Let's face it, he wasn't ready for prime time last year, which shouldn't surprise us, because the previous season he'd started the year in high A. So he came a very long way in a very short period of time. Sent down to the minors, Buffalo apparently was still too close to home, and he struggled. Got sent down to New Hampshire, where he reunited with fellow Canadian Stubby Clapp, and the rest was magic. He wrote a magical summer the rest of the way. I was actually surprised that we didn't see more of him down the stretch for the Blue Jays. I thought he would be, whether it be a late inning defensive replacement or whatever, for instead of Carrera. And to see the two stolen bases in the playoffs, that's just a glimpse of what Dalton Pompey can do for this team. I think the power may not project for high numbers, maybe double digit numbers, but he is the full package. And I think at this point, maybe not the best athlete in the system, but I think certainly the most major league ready.
Now, another guy that you have in the top 10, I know we've already discussed Rowdy Tellez, and he's getting a lot of press right now in the Arizona Fall League, with Bernie Pleskov, I think his name is, writing up an article on Tellez. But there's another guy there in the top 10. I mean, people have heard about Connor Green because he rose so quickly, and I think some people really have heard about Sean Reed Foley. He struggled a little bit in Dunedin after starting strongly in Lansing, which was still a surprise because he was still 19 years old. But the guy that I think is so interesting that you have here at number 6 that I think might surprise people is the guy who was living in Franklin Barreto's shadow last year, and that's Richard Urania. What do you think about Urania?
Well, I think much of what I think about Urania actually comes courtesy of you. I will acknowledge that, and other sources. I think he has been labeled for more than two seasons major league ready on defense, and I think he showed a surprising amount of pop this year. I think he too is the complete package. Needs to cut down on the strikeouts, needs to work on his pitch recognition, needs to hit southpaws a little bit better. But if he can even, I mean, Blue Jay fans love Ryan Goins. There are, I don't know if you belong to as many of the Blue Jays fans groups as I do, Jay. I post links to my articles on there, but there seems to be, on any given night, on any one of those forums, there seems to be a debate as to whether Ryan Goins or Devin Travis should be the starting second baseman next year. With all due respect to Ryan Goins, is laughable. But if Blue Jays fans love Ryan Goins, I think they are just going to be absolutely mesmerized by Urania's defense from everything that I've read, the little bit that I've seen of him. And if he can hit at a replacement level, then his gloves certainly will carry him to that position. So I think if there's one thing we learned from Troy Tulowitzki this year, It's that up the middle defense. I know more and more strikeouts are being recorded every year. Fewer balls are being put in play, and there are some that say that the importance of defense has become less. But I think your up the middle defense is still certainly so important, and the vast upgrade that Tulowitzki represented over the unfortunate Jose Reyes, who certainly hasn't had a very good 2015, as the latest news reports or any indication. But I think Tulowitzki showed us how important that premium defensive position is, possibly second after catching in terms of importance in defense. And so I think Urena fits very well there. And I think I think if the other pieces are there offensively around him, then even though he may not hit quite as well as he did this year or hit for as much pop, who knows, maybe he will, but it's going to be that gold glove caliber defense that's going to be so important, especially with, like the Justin Schaefers, like the Connor Greens, and even the John Harrises, the sinker pitchers, the ground ball inducing pitchers that the organization has coming up.
Well, you know, there's a couple things that I will tell you about Urena. I've seen him play a lot this year. You know, Lansing is a fantastic place to go because it's not far away, and you get to see pretty much the guys that, especially at the beginning of the year, the guys that the Blue Jays really have a lot of faith in. We didn't get to see a lot of the newly drafted players this year. I think a lot of them struggled, you know, at the Northwest League level and even lower down. So we didn't really get to see very many of the newest players in the organization. I think some of them will be coming to Lansing next year. But the thing that I really love about Lansing is I get to see these guys. I try to get to Lansing two or three times a year, and I got to saw a lot of Urena. I've seen a lot of DJ Davis, and one of the things about Urena that I really loved seeing was his development. And I've talked to Jesse Goldberg-Strasser a lot. We chat when I'm down there, and you know we'll talk a little bit on email here and there, and. And he, you know, Richie, as they call him, in the first part of the year, I really hated his swing from the right side. I was watching it, and you know, he hit a home run in the game against Michigan State University, but it looked to me like he just ran into it. The barrel of the bat was just in the right place against a guy throwing about 84 to 86, and it just looked like he ran into it. He didn't have the bat speed that I think you need against, you know, more premium velocity, and it just looked awkward. And by the end of the year, when I got down to Lansing for August and then for their playoff series against Great Lakes in September, it looked like his swing had been smoothed out so much. It didn't look awkward. It looked almost as good as his left-handed swing. It's not quite there yet. But as you can see, if you look at the splits, he hits for a lot more power from the left side. Yes. But the right side is coming along, and he's hitting the ball up the middle, and he's making very solid contact. I'm not going to go as far as you might and say that his defense is at a gold glove level. I think his defense is good, and I really like his arm. I've seen him make some really good off-balance throws with a lot of strength on it. But he still, you know, struggles sometimes with the routine plays. He still bobbles the ball a little bit, takes a little too long to transfer. But the potential is there for at least a plus defender. I'm not going to go out on that limb and say Gold Glover, but I think he can be an above average major league shortstop. You know, for me, it's I'd like to see him just be a little more consistent there, and I'd like to see him take more walks. And that's sort of the knock on a lot of Dominican players who, especially the Latin American guys who just, you know, the old saying is you don't walk off the island. So,
absolutely.
You know, he's a guy like Joel Lugo and Gustavo Pierre and even Emilio Guerrero, that he just needs to be more patient and wait for his pitch, especially within the strike zone. I always thought that was Lugo's issue where he could hit just about anything, so he didn't make the pitcher throw him a pitch that he could hit hard. And I think Urena sort of has that. He didn't take a lot of pitches that were in or around the strike zone. So I think he's a guy that he's number six now, but maybe in another year he could be in the top five.
I agree with you. The bat to me is still a question mark, but the athleticism is there, and it's evident by the adjustments he made from the right side, as you were saying. And having coached a lot of athletes in a lot of different sports, I know that the top athletes don't really need much coaching. They just sometimes need time. And that may be the case with Urena, like coming up through playing the Dominican and coming up in the short season leagues. He was not seeing top secondary pitches, and he really still isn't at Lansing, but he might have got a bit of a taste of them. Definitely got a taste of them with Dunedin, and it looks like, judging from his batting average, probably seeing some much higher grade breaking pitches in the Dominican this winter. But I agree with you. I think six, I felt I was holding back a little bit, and that's because I still don't think that he's really as close to his potential as he could be.
All right. So before we wrap things up, tell us who's, somebody that we haven't talked about. Maybe he's not even on your list, but he's sort of one of those guys that you're like, this guy could be interesting.
It's like you read my mind. There's a name that's just, and it was actually Shai Davidi tweeted him about him this morning, and that is Chad Jurado, left-handed sidewinding reliever with a very funky deceptive delivery, who was very effective in relief for Lansing, and even I believe saw some time at Buffalo this year, and is pitching well in the Arizona Fall League. And Davidi had said today that he was told to keep an eye on Jurado, because there is a chance that he could be in the major leagues sooner rather than later. And I think, given Aaron Loop's struggles this year, I think maybe that first left-hander out of the bullpen role is up for grabs. So there's a guy who maybe doesn't profile as a top prospect, doesn't profile as even a first division player, but there's just somebody who is just completely off the radar that I've been watching since about midseason this year. Another one of those guys the Blue Jays drafted a few years ago, mid-level guy, probably more of an org guy, I think college senior with little negotiating room, but he has morphed into a very effective for just a few batters, so possibly a loogie or a bit more, but he's really profiling, developing as an effective left-handed arm out of the pen.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned that, because the first time I saw Jurado, he was just out of college in 2013, and he was very, very effective in Lansing, and but he's really gone on to improve the velocity from what I saw. The first time I saw him, he was maxing out at about 86 miles an hour, but I did see him in a I saw him in spring training last year, and he was up to about 90, and I think he's sort of sitting there in the 88 to 90 mile an hour, but with tremendous run. And I remember watching him in spring training, and there was just a crowd around the fence for that game where, everybody just wanted to see his stuff. Everyone wanted to see the sink on his pitches, mm-hmm. because he just gets so much movement. And I think that's the type of thing that's going to carry him well. And I definitely think that he's a guy that maybe a lot of people aren't aware of, but I totally agree with you, and I'm glad you brought him up, because he's the type of guy that people watch the movement on his pitches, and you know it's great. You go to a ball game, you can't really see it unless you're right behind the plate, but if you watching it on TV, you'd be able to see just some tremendous sink and run on his fastball. He doesn't throw hard, but he can locate, stay down, and I think he could definitely be in the Blue Jays bullpen next year. Yeah, absolutely.
He in the Arizona Fall League Fall Stars game, which was played this past weekend, he retired, I think it was three of the four hitters that I watched him pitch to, and he was only topping at about 91. But left-handers have a really tough time picking up that delivery, which looks like it's coming from somewhere around his ankle.
Exactly, and that funky delivery, it's hard to sort of estimate the effect that's going to have, especially on a same-handed hitter. But yes, absolutely. I think he's a really interesting guy. And I think he's the type of guy that, again, I think is good in a clubhouse. From what I've heard about him, I haven't really talked to him much, but from what I've heard about him, he's a very good guy in the organization.
And let me ask you now, Jay, while I have you, let me turn the tables on you and ask you the same question. Who is somebody, I know you are still in the process of coming up with your list, I'm sure you've got it pretty much in your mind, but who is somebody who is maybe off that list at the moment, but I'd be curious to know who you think might fit that profile.
Well, I don't do lists anymore. I've come around to being a little bit philosophically against them. But it's interesting because there are a few guys who, you know, if things break the right way and if they figure some things out, they can be, you know, pretty spectacular. Josh Almonte is one of them. He's right now, I think there's too much swing and miss in his game, but he has some pop. He has some speed. He's got an absolute cannon of an arm from right field. I mean, he made a scout in a game that I was at. He made a scout who was actually scouting the other team sit up and take a note of him, because of just how strong his arm is. It's got to be at least a 70 or an 80 grade arm that scouts really, you know, they're looking for those guys with a tool. And I think Kylie McDaniel wrote something up about him last year on FanGraphs and said, you know, he's quite raw. I think he's from New York State, which means he didn't get as much development time as the guys from the South that are much more heavily scouted, from Florida, from Texas, from California, and from those areas where there are much more scouts, but the guys play all year round almost.
And he missed a good chunk of the year too, and I was overmatched in the beginning, but really finished strongly, as I recall.
He did finish strongly, and I think I wrote something about that in my summary of the Lugnuts, where I sort of looked at his stats for over the course of the whole year and looked at his splits. And the end of the year was just, it was like a night and day and a different player. And I think the hitting coach there, Kenny Graham, told me that, you know, he really likes what he's got going. Another guy I really like, you know, who knows if he ever makes the major leagues, but it's Chris Carlson. Carlson, he's old for the level he was playing at. He was 24 in Lansing last year. But the guy is just, you know, they call him Grinder. He grinds out every at-bat. He plays every pitch like it means something. And, you know, he's hit close to 300 in two seasons, and that's not nothing. And, you know, I think there's a little bit of Kevin Pillar in him in terms of there's a chip on his shoulder. He was drafted around the same round in the high 20s, early 30s. And he does everything well. He's got a solid arm. He plays good defense. He can play all three outfield positions. He's got a little bit of pop. He's got a little bit of speed, but he's got a really great approach at the plate. He doesn't strike out much. He walks a lot. And I'm curious to see what he does. And another guy, if I, you know, just keep going.
Go ahead.
It's my podcast.
Okay.
I'll talk as long as I want. Is Jorge Flores.
Yes.
You know, he's
having a good season in the Mexican Winter League.
Exactly. And again, he's a fairly young guy, but he's overcome all of the challenges against him. You know, he's 5'5".
Altuve, yeah.
And, you know, he came to the U.S., I think, from Mexico as a kid, as a teenager, to go to high school and to go to college in the U.S., probably to help him get drafted. And you know, he's a guy who can play second and short really well. He's a utility-type guy. He's, you know, likely not going to be an everyday player, but he's definitely the type of guy you want to have around.
I like that name, and he's certainly overlooked because of other middle infielders in the system. But, yeah, I kept track of his progress this year, and he had a really decent season with New Hampshire. And certainly, I think, probably will be in Buffalo this year. And let me throw another name out before we call it a night. Juan Kelly, catcher, first base, DH type. Struggled a little bit with the bat at Lansing. I believe started at Vancouver. Stint in Lansing, finished the year in Vancouver. But there is some pop in that bat. Again, somebody still learning the ins and outs of pitch recognition. still somebody who there's a question about what position he might ultimately play. But I think that bat is going to carry him up through to the upper reaches of the minors, if not beyond one day.
Absolutely, and I know people in Lansing. I think he actually did better in Lansing overall, in the, of course, the small sample
yes.
size, than he did in the Northwest League. And it's funny because he went down after his stint in Lansing and didn't do all that well. And I'm almost wondering if it was just a letdown that he felt. But he took mm-hmm. Took some walks. He took 8 walks in 71 plate appearances in Lansing, hit 3 home runs. He hit for more power in Lansing than he did in Vancouver.
That's true.
It'll be interesting. I mean, I'm just sort of scanning right now to see if those games were on the road. His home run in Vancouver was at home, and it's a fairly big park from what I understand.
It is, yeah. High outfield walls, yeah.
Yeah, same thing in Lansing along corners, and it's a fairly deep center field. A lot of doubles in Lansing, but not a lot of home runs.
Right.
But so, yeah, Juan Kelly is definitely the type of guy who is going to be overlooked, at least until he gets a lot more at-bats, he gets a lot more playing time. And I think the other question, he did have very solid caught stealing rates as a catcher, throughout 38% in Vancouver and 33% in Lansing. So if he keeps that up, that solid arm, he's definitely going to be on the radar. But at that level, we may see Dan Jansen back for another year behind the plate in Lansing. Mm-hmm. We may see Juan Kelly trying to split time with him there. Michael De La Cruz may move up as a backup in Dunedin, but I think Pentecost is starting no lower than Dunedin. So, there's this whole system of catchers that are going to have to start moving up. I mean, Sean Ochinco declared free agency, so there's one fewer guy to worry about. But it really is the situation where these guys start the season. I think the Jays are going to want to see more of Kelly at the beginning of the year. And they may want to get Dan Jansen back in Lansing just to start the year to see what he does, because he did struggle a fair bit with the bat. He wasn't making a lot of solid contact. I love watching him take BP. He's got a great swing, but he was popping a lot of balls up or hitting a lot of softer ground balls in the games. And I think the Blue Jays might want him to get some at-bats there for at least a month or two to see what he does. And maybe he does what Dickie Joe Thon did, where he just dominated Lansing over the first, 3 weeks of the season and then went to Dunedin and didn't come back.
Yeah. Dickie Joe Thon, who's playing in the Premier 12 tournament for Puerto Rico, watched him play against Canada yesterday morning.
And how did he do?
Just saw one at bat from him. It was just those games started about 5:30 our time, and I'm walking my dogs and dashing off to work in the morning and trying to find my keys and everything else. So I just saw the one at bat, but a very hard hit ground ball off the glove of legendary Newmarket, Ontario, minor league and major league third baseman Pete Orr. But then he was doubled off. I actually saw Philippe Aumont released by the Blue Jays after a brief trial with him. He loaded the bases, but actually got a strikeout and a double play ball to get out of it. But Justin Atkinson is playing for the Canadian team, a Blue Jays farmhand, not seeing very much playing time. I don't know if he's played it yet. These guys are more the AA, AAA type of veterans that are playing. But that was just – it was nice to see Thon in action. Hadn't seen him since earlier in the year.
It is nice. He's a guy who actually impressed me at the beginning of the year, that he added some power. Unfortunately, we didn't see a lot of it in Dunedin. But again, he's a guy who I think still has a couple of years left, and the Blue Jays did invest fairly heavily in him, so I think he'll be getting another chance to show what he can do.
Definitely.
All right, well, I think we're going to cut it here. We've been talking a long time, but I've been joined by Doug Fox of Clutchlings, and you can find that blog at clutchlings.blogspot.ca, at least for the time being. You can find his top 20 prospects list, as well as his top 5 that didn't make it. Always a fascinating read. You've got something else you wanted to mention, right?
I just started working on a draft review mainly I'm feeling a little nostalgic that Alex Anthopoulos is gone, but I thought 5 years is a good time to let pass before evaluating a draft. And 2010 was the first draft, his first as a general manager. And while the scouting department does the majority of the drafting, it's their recommendations. They certainly take their cue from the general manager and the top admin about what type of player that they're looking for in their scouting. So just in the very preliminary stages of evaluating that draft by Alex and his scouting department, it was a very good one. Unfortunately, several of the players are no longer with the Blue Jays organization, and they're contributing for other teams, like, say, a Noah Syndergaard or a Justin Nicolino. But so that one I'm working on, compiling some numbers and just taking a look and seeing how some of the players fared in that draft. So probably at some point in the next week or so, I'll have that one out.
All right, we're going to look forward to that. That's on Clutchlings, clutchlings.blogspot.ca. Thanks very much to Doug Fox for joining us at the Blue Jays From Away podcast.
That's it for episode number 46 of the Blue Jays From Away podcast. I'd like to thank Doug Fox for joining Blue Jays From Away. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter @JaysFromAway. Come on back soon and go Jays go.